This is a Triple J podcast.
Hey, it's Dave Marchese. Welcome to the Shake Up on Hack. We're wrapping up another big week in news. There was definitely a few headlines that really dominated over the past couple of days, and we want to unpack those a little bit. So here's a bit of a taste of what we're digging into in this podcast.
Hack.
Football Australia has admitted it was blindsided after star striker Sam Kerr fronted a UK court.
Do you think that cats and dogs should be allowed on domestic flights?
Some new research has found Aussie parents give girls less recognition for their creative work compared to boys.
On Triple J.
Yeah, the Sam Kerr allegations, pets on planes, the toy gender divide. What are we talking about? We're going to be explaining all of these over the next half an hour. But before we get into all of that, let's start by meeting the Shake Up crew. First, sports creator, co-host of the Sport and Spice pod, Lavin Dubai. What's happening?
Happy to be here. Big day for me. I didn't know that I was in your intro until I heard my voice.
But
I'm happy to be back.
Who knows?
We meet again.
Who knows what will happen in this show? We might update the intro with another superstar comment.
I'm like, am I going to be, where is my voice going to end up?
You might be immortalized. And it tends to stay in there for a while too. So, yeah.
Apologies to the Commonwealth Games.
You're like, oh, what am I going to say? Ooh. No, but don't hold back. We want the full opinions. We want exactly what you think. Also with us today, media reporter at Crikey, Dunny Saeed. What's happening?
Not much. I got this message and I was like, okay, well,
look at it.
Maybe I should say something spicy. Get myself into the studio.
No, don't go too spicy. Let's hold back. No, well, you know.
I could never.
You've got to be careful. And, you know, you're a journalist, so you're like, oh, whatever's printed, it's there forever, right?
Exactly right.
How's your weekend looking, Dunny?
We'll play some golf.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really excited.
You can't play cricket because you've hurt your finger, you said.
I have. Very broken finger. Turns out I can't catch. my mates keep telling me, just catch it, mate.
Yeah. Hey, good advice. But rest the finger. Enjoy the golf. But before we get to all of that, let's dive into the shaker.
Hack.
The racially aggravated words that Sam Kerr said to a police officer have come out. And all I could say is, wow.
On Triple J.
Yeah, a few months ago, Sam Kerr was the most talked about Australian sports person, riding that wave of love during the Matildas Women's World Cup campaign. This week, I think fair to say also the most talked about Australian sports person. Very different reason though. Shock news that she'd been charged with racially aggravated harassment of a police officer in London more than a year ago. Now, she's pleaded not guilty. She's set to face trial next year. But it did kickstart a week of debate about racism, role models and expectations.
Hack.
Matilda's captain Samantha Kerr has been charged with a racially aggravated offence.
British tabloid newspaper The Sun reports Matilda's captain called a police officer a stupid white bastard.
A first time I ever heard about it was this morning.
The incident happened last January, as in 14 months ago.
She had a duty to inform Football Australia, her governing body, and her coach and the staff.
Sam Kerr is arguing that she did not, in fact, say stupid white bastard.
They're claiming she called the London police officer a stupid white cop.
On Triple J.
Oh, again, I do want to make it clear that all of this is before the courts in the UK. Her legal team is seeking to have the charge dismissed. These are allegations. Sam has pleaded not guilty. There are those reports, though, today, as you just heard, that she's set to deny that she called the police officer a bastard. Still, I'm keen to hear what you think of this one. Should Sam Kerr step down as Matilda's captain while she's facing these allegations? What do you reckon? Message in 0439757555. This is the Shake Up on Hack. I'm Dave Marchese, breaking it down with sports podcaster Lav Bai and journalist at Crikey, Dunny Saeed. Lav, this story's been a bit of a roller coaster ride, hasn't it? Like, what were your first thoughts when the story broke and was facing these allegations, Sam Kerr, of racism?
First 24 hours, I woke up and at first my immediate thought, there's another footballer called Samantha Kerr. The fact that it said Samantha, not Sam, made me think it could have been her. Wasn't. First 24 hours, I love Sam Kerr, but I am not going to defend anyone before we have any context. And the first 24 hours, we knew nothing. We knew there was a charge and that was it. Since then, it has changed. But I need to ask, has she actually come out? Was that a real thing that she's come out to clarify?
Well, there are reports that...
Because that is so interesting.
Yeah. And, I mean, does it change how we're viewing this? Dunny, what's your take on what's unfolded this week?
Jeez, big week for soccer Twitter. When it first came out, and for some reason or other, I was it came out at about 10:30 at night, and I was up quite late. I sort of saw it unfold.
Mm.
And all I could think of was... I was very perplexed by a woman of colour being charged with racism, and I just thought, that cop's white, isn't he? And I turned out to be, assuming that she was accurate, and allegedly accurate in the description, turned out to be right. And so it kind of... I struggle with this idea of what I imagine in my head to be a relatively sensitive person on the maybe overly sensitive person on the receiving end of something like that, making it making such a big deal, such that she's been charged with an offence that we have equivalents to in Australia, and it's used as a stick to beat predominantly people of colour, predominantly Indigenous and Torres Strait Islander people with over white people. And so I just really struggled with it initially. I didn't have this, oh my God, what if Sam Kerr's a racist? What if our Matilda's Queen is a racist? I didn't really struggle with that existential crisis. There was a TikTok doing the rounds of like, and there was a Twitter Advocate article being like, that's a stressful 24 hours. I wasn't really stressed.
Right, okay. So you were like, there's more detail we need to have here. I mean, that's kind of a lot of it as well. People were demanding detail straight away. Where is it? We need more information. But it took a while for some of it to, some of those allegations to really be known. We've got some messages coming through. Someone says, I was a bit apprehensive when I first heard about the Sam Kerr charge, but now that the alleged incident is out, I'm completely behind her. That's someone's opinion there. Another person says, I'm a cop here in Victoria. I've been called worse. I laugh to charge someone for saying that, harden up. That's their opinion there. And someone else says, innocent until proven guilty, stop the cancel culture. Dunny, what's your take on this? You know, a lot of people saying the argument, what Sam is accused of saying is racist, reverse racism, that kind of thing. What's your take on that?
I'm not an academic in this regard, but there's a lot of academic literature that more or less says that if we take our idea of racism to be a little bit more than skin deep and more than just sort of isolated behavioural interactions, we see it as actually what we, you know, in a power dynamic context. And in this context, and you know, white people have never been, perhaps I need to double check that. Well, generally speaking, white people aren't the oppressed party. There's no sort of historical context in which we're going to see, you know, a lot of people take that and go, well, what if she'd said it was a stupid black bastard? It's a false equivalency there. So I struggle, this idea of reverse racism, I really struggle with in terms of it existing.
Yeah, people on the text line saying similar things. Someone says there's no such thing as racism against white people. Racism is prejudice plus power. Jules from NAM says racism is about power, not labels. Lav, do you think there's a difference in what society sees as racism and maybe what the law says? Do you think that that's another discussion that needs to be had as well? Because there's a lot of this debate happening on social media at the moment.
Yeah, so for starters, I agree with the general definition that racism is prejudice plus power. You cannot say that a woman of colour, even though she is the head of the Matildas, a woman of colour, a gay woman of colour at that, does not have a power dynamic over a white police officer, assuming that they are white and she didn't horrifically get her description wrong. But that's the thing. I think it may be different in the eyes of the law, and I am by no means an expert in British law, but I do think it is interesting that it took an entire year, and it is being alleged that, like by media reports, that the reason it took a year is because they had to work out what to charge her with. And I think a lot of people are now turning around and going, well, she threw up in the back of a cab, allegedly. She allegedly didn't want to pay the cop, the cab driver. All of these things, people are adding their own context that isn't necessarily in the charge to begin with.
Yes.
But the difference is we need to separate everything that happened there from the charge. She may have, for all we know, she may have done wrong in that sense, but that's not what this charge is about. This charge isn't about whatever happened in the cab. It is about her treatment towards the police officer. And I think that is an important distinction to make, that I saw a good tweet about it that said, you can tell in this person's opinion that it's not racism because people are very freely repeating what she said and nobody, look, you just played it on Triple J radio, what the allegation, what she allegedly said, nobody is thinking twice about saying that. Mm. The fact that some places are saying that white is a slur is really interesting to me. So I think that is the interesting thing here. And I'm interested to see how it plays out in court and how their laws view what has been said and like our idea of what racism is versus the law's definition.
We've got a lot of time to wait, I think, until all this does play out in court potentially. I mean, we've got to see, obviously, Sam's lawyers looking to have these charges thrown out. We do have some different opinions on the text line. Sula says, stupid white, anything is racist, pure and simple. Another person says, one rule for men, another for women. Kerr sets herself up as a role model, then allegedly doesn't act like one. That's someone's opinion there. Dunny, I want to ask about this idea that, you know, someone in a position like Sam Kerr should be stood down from a leadership role as soon as an allegation like this is made. Because a lot of people, sports reporters, commentators were saying, look, we look at the NRL, the no-fault stand-down rule, it should be something similar. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were really fast to make that judgment. Peter Fitzsimons was so fast that they forgot he wrote his piece before the alleged slur had come out and then had to clarify it later in the Sydney Morning Herald. So there were a lot of people that were really, really fast to make that judgment. I think it's fair to say a lot of sports reporters that I've spoken to think that if Sam was in any other code, in any other sport, perhaps of a different stature, that she would lose a leadership position, that it was quite an egregious breach to not inform Football Australia ahead of time. I personally don't think it's such an egregious breach, given the nature of the charge, like we've discussed. But yeah, I don't. It's also convenient because Sam's out for, what, 8 months more with an ACL, something like that? You could suspend her for an arbitrary 6 months and she'd still not miss a single game as captain. It would be the easiest PR play in the world for Football Australia, as far as I'm concerned.
What do you think about, Lav, Sam not really informing all of the officials is what is said to have happened, like Football Australia kind of officials saying, we didn't know about this until it was made public in the media?
So just a bit of context for anyone that isn't in the inner workings of how Football Australia and national team call-ups work. Mm. As of the last CBA, Sam Kerr is not actually currently contracted to the Matildas. So although she is in theory our captain, right now, and she is our team captain in a sense, but right now she is not under contract with the Matildas.
Right.
So they actually don't really have the ability to suspend her, under my understanding, because she's not, compared to, say, the Roosters, for example, and everything that's going on there, they do have powers to suspend and no fault stand down and all that sort of stuff. But Sam Kerr is not under contract with the Matildas, under my understanding of how the current CBA works. So a lot of this commentary to have her stand down or whatever doesn't actually make sense because of just the way that it works. That's not how Football Australia works. I do think, though, she probably did mess up by not telling Football Australia, maybe not after it happened, the alleged incident happened, because we don't know whether she thought she was going to be charged or anything like that. But I think within 24, 48 hours of that charge being laid, she should have said something, purely from the fact that, like, the story that she's now coming out with and what we know the alleged comment was, they could have avoided a massive PR disaster. Like, that first 24 hours, it made a lot of people in Football Australia look like they had egg on their face because they didn't know what had happened. Whereas if she had called up...
It just seemed really messy.
If she had called up, like, the media manager, Anne O'Dong, who does a wonderful job at managing the Matildas media, if she'd gone, hey, this thing has happened, here is my side of the story, I don't want to make a statement about it, but you guys should know, I think the statements that Football Australia would have come out with would have probably been a bit more concise and would have made more sense, rather than us all sort of going, oh, we don't know what's happening, we're waiting to hear more. I think that's the only thing, in my opinion, right now that is a bit of a red flag.
Yeah, we've got messages coming through. It's really split the text line, people with different opinions. So people supporting Sam Kerr. Someone says you cannot call it racism if your race hasn't felt oppression. That was Georgia and Shell Harbour. Another person says, sorry, but if they can say the full slur on morning TV, then it's not that bad. Someone echoing what you said, Lav. But then on the other side, someone says racism is discrimination based on race. Skin colour can go both ways. Another person says, how is Sam Kerr, who's on a multi-million-dollar contract, less powerful than the constable whose annual salary Kerr probably earns in a day?
Respond to that one.
Go.
Yeah. It's a common one. The constable has the power to arrest her. The constable has a gun. The social dynamic is that we interact with police in a very different way because they are socially set in a certain way. That's the power dynamic there. It doesn't matter in the eyes of the law, and we've seen it in the States sort of over the last few years with particularly black sports people who are treated very differently by police once they become sort of one of the great unwashed.
And yeah. I think the thing that's being lost here is, much like what we've seen in America unfold over the last couple of years, British police are not free from their own racism issues. You look at death in custody statistics, you look at a lot of stuff like that, and there is a definite power imbalance between white, like predominantly white police officers and people of colour in Britain, is my issue with this.
Should also point out, you know, not all cops in the UK carry guns, you know, should make that clear as well. There's a lot of messages on this one. Someone else, it doesn't matter what colour somebody is. I agree. What she allegedly said wasn't bad, but come on, that's someone's opinion there. Interesting to see the leaders across the country take different viewpoints. Education Minister Jason Clare says, I think I'm uniquely qualified to answer this question as someone who's often called a stupid white bastard. And the New South Wales Premier Chris Minns saying he wouldn't consider it racist if he was called that. Another story we covered on Hack this week, which is kind of interesting, was about sports haters. And I don't know whether you saw this, Lav, but basically some research that's been done at a university at Deakin where they found 20% of Australians don't like sport. They hate sport, which seems like a lot, right? Let's say one in five, maybe. What do you think? Do you think that's more than you expected? And how do you cope with someone who doesn't like sport? Are you a person that you can't be friends with someone if they're not in the same?
I have a very interesting take on this because my dear mother, I have grown up with a mother who despised sport, told me for years that she hated sport, but would sit down and watch the State of Origin every year, but fundamentally said she hated sport, whereas my dad is a sports nut. And what I have worked out with her and through working in sport, particularly with women, is people don't like the culture around sport, and they don't like – sport is always very gatekeepy. It's something that I work really hard to fight against. But it's not just against women. There is a specific type of person, and it's the same as when you wear a band shirt and people go, oh, can you name 10 songs? And do you actually know the zodiac sign of the drummer? Whereas there's not enough entry points to go – you can just watch, say, Drive to Survive and go – yeah, I like this. You don't need to know every F1 driver in history. And I think there's not enough entry points for people to get into sport. And it's so exclusionary that they think they hate it when they actually probably would like some sort of
But sport. Is it okay if people just don't like it? Like in the sense that if, because when we did some opinion gathering on the streets, we went out, filmed people, asked them whether they like sport. The people that we spoke to, a lot of them said, no, I don't like it. I've always felt a bit uncomfortable with it. I didn't like it in school or the rest of it. Put that up on our Instagram page. People slamming those people, like going to town, just ripping them to shreds for their opinion. Danny, it seems a bit weird, isn't it? That we have such a problem with people who maybe aren't as into sport as others.
Yeah, absolutely. I firstly completely agree in terms of barriers to entry and the type of person that's allowed to enjoy sport. For sure, I completely agree in that regard. But I actually think I might take the view, I do generally take the view that I think there's sometimes a little bit of intellectual snobbery involved when we talk about, oh, I don't like sport. Oh, it's a little bit, I remember
There was a prominent Australian commentator a couple of years ago on the AFL Grand Final who said, "Dear most Aussies, who are the D's? What are this thing? What is this thing you care so much about?" And someone said to her, "You don't know what you're missing out on." She says, "Well, you haven't read Austin and Dickens and Gaskell."
There is a holier than thou mentality about people. Some people that don't like sport.
No, absolutely, and I don't think that's true of sports at all. I think there's, you know, A, there's nuance. B, I don't think it's any lower of a cultural expression than the arts. There's a very good reason why the Romans had their theatres and their arts and their plays in the same Colosseum that they did their sports. It's because it speaks to a lot of the same elements of cultural identity that the arts do, that music does, that everything else, that literature does, and it's just expressed differently. The average NRL player's life, I dare say, is probably a little bit more diverse than someone at the Belvoir Street Theatre.
maybe. We've got lots of messages coming through on this one too, but hey, we've got to move on.
Pack. If I was an owner, I would be like so in my head, like, "Oh, please do not bark right now, I'm begging."
On Triple J.
Yeah, you know those flights where there's no entertainment, going somewhere around Australia, domestic trip, you're bored, you're looking for something to keep you occupied. Wouldn't it be great to have some cute little animals there? Little puppy, little kitty, something to keep you distracted, because this could be just around the corner, but not everyone's happy.
Hack. We're announcing dogs and cats on board with their parents.
Critics say it's barking mad.
There are a few rules, like there are going to be designated aisles they can sit in, and the pets have to stay in an approved carrier the entire flight.
This is going to divide some Australians.
They've got no place in the cabin.
I have no problem with that. I think it's wonderful.
I'm allergic to fur.
What happens when they want to go to the toilet?
On Triple J.
Yeah, what do we think of Virgin Australia's plans to allow small dogs and cats on board flights in the cabin? Are you all for it or are you dead against it? And what is the weirdest thing you've seen on a plane? Because like I said earlier, I saw a chicken on a plane once and I'm not sure how it got there. It was alive. Call in 1300 055 536. You can message in to 0439 757 555. This is The Shake Up on Hack. I'm Dave Marchese, breaking it down with sports podcast 11 Dubai journalist at Crikey, Dunny Saeed. Dunny, pets on planes, what do we think?
Huge yes from me. Huge really? Yes from me. I appreciate, and I say this perhaps as someone who's I'm a dog uncle. I've never owned.
Oh, so you don't have a pet yourself?
I don't have a pet myself. I've never had a pet myself besides budgies and fish and some chickens. But I am a massive fan. I think we should be doing, as a general rule, a lot more to integrate our pets with our daily lives. I think we should treat them as animals and not as possessions.
Sounds good in theory, but there's a whole lot of other stuff you got to consider, right? I mean, Lav, firstly, what's your opinion?
I'm a yes. Okay. I have a greyhound and I wish that I could bring the greyhound into the ABC. He's been in other offices. He's so well behaved.
Is this your pitch to like bring your greyhound in for the shake-up next
time? If my
time?
Boss is listening to this, please let me bring my greyhound into the ABC. I've actually seen there was a rescue greyhound that flew business class to Italy to move and slept on the business class seat the whole way.
Oh.
And didn't have any accidents, was so well behaved.
What a good boy.
But I do also understand, I think there just needs to be some way of working out the logistics of, you know, before you book a flight, whether it's a pet-friendly flight or not.
Well, yeah.
Because there are people, like, I weirdly have an allergy to cats that okay. I forget about until I see my best friend and her cats love me. Cats don't usually like me, but her cats love me. And after a day there, I'm like, ooh.
And it might be something you're not like thinking about, but just hits you. Someone says, yeah, yes and no, because I do have allergies. Even their residue can irritate me when they're not there. Another person says, partner and I flew from New Orleans to Nashville with a lady who had a stinky little dog and the whole plane smelt. No thanks. Someone else, I'm all for pets on planes. Imagine the hookup potential with cool dog owners. True. Who knows what's going to happen? Good conversation starter, icebreaker. And Luke says, oh my God, it's bad enough that they let howling babies and infants on planes. Oh, controversial.
I do think it's interesting though, the comment about the cleanliness. Have you ever been on a plane and seen?
People already got the dogs out.
Like, they don't have much time to clean the planes at the best of times.
Well, that's what I was
thinking.
You've
always got like, you open your pouch sometimes and there's like a dirty tissue or something. So if they're not cleaning, they're not even disinfecting seats half the time. Are they going to be getting rid of dog smells? Because I love my dog, but my dog stinks. My house smells like dog. My bed smells like dog. Everything I own smells like dog.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'd like to know. The interesting part with allergies is that Virgin Australia came out and addressed it specifically, and they said, well, we're going to limit it to a certain part of the plane, and actually our filtration systems and blah, blah, blah are good enough that we think it's a low risk. I think that's a really interesting experiment.
Have they heard of COVID, though? Like, did we see how many people got COVID on planes? I don't know how good those filtration systems are.
Hospital grade, they tell me. Or they told the rest of us.
They also said.
They
also said they did this survey, and 85% of respondents voted in favour of this. They say people do want this. Almost 70% of households have a pet. We've got more messages coming through. Someone says, my friend used to work for a US airline and told me that he once saw an emotional support horse standing in the aisle of a plane. What? Another person says, I have two beagles. That would be chaos. They would eat all your food. Someone else says, dogs have taken over all parks. They don't need planes as well. Right, okay. So definitely some mixed reactions. Is there weird stuff that you've seen on a plane, Dunny? Is there anything? Or Lav, have you been on a plane and gone, what the hell? What's going on here?
I mean, I've seen a lot of very unhygienic people.
This always comes up. People put your shoes on.
Where people put their feet in the seat pocket. Ugh. But I think my question here, I'm about to go to Europe for a month. Everyone be very jealous of me. But the problem, like, your dog can be on the plane, but then I land in Madrid. What do I do with my greyhound? No hotels are going to let me have my greyhound.
Oh.
Like, I understand it for moving purposes, but there's always been options. Like I said with the greyhound that flew business to Italy.
Yeah.
There has always been options, but I don't know that we need to normalize it. Because I don't necessarily think that putting dogs on planes is great for their mental health. I've heard quite a few stories, people taking their dog on a plane and then the dog just sort of never mentally being okay again because would be very traumatic for them.
I mean, just imagine though, if a dog was like yapping, like just going off its head. Like I just keep thinking of the cats coughing up the fur balls,
and
stuff like that.
They're the people that are going to bring their, like my dog, my dog is dead silent. I used to work in a production studio and my dog wouldn't make a noise.
Okay.
It's not those people that are taking their dogs on planes. It's the people with the annoying dogs that want to take their dogs on planes.
Yeah, someone here says, if you've ever experienced how difficult it is to get care for your pets while you're on holidays, you'll understand it more. Backing up your point there, Lav. I don't know. This is just domestic travel at this point, Dunny. Like, there's no claim that it's going to be made international. But you seemed all for it. Would you be keen for it on a long-haul flight as well?
Oh, Dave, now you're pushing me. In the state, I mean, this happens overseas. In the States, they've got a lot of limits are around the 12-hour mark.
Mm.
12 hours is still a bloody long time. But, yeah, I'm not sure how I would go with an international flight. But, again, like you say, I've seen a lot of unhygienic humans. I sympathise with the care requirements. I almost once babysat Funky. Do you remember this?
Yes. I do remember this.
What's this?
I almost once...
My dog's name's Funky.
Oh, okay. Yes. I was like, what's this little private conversation that's playing out on national radio?
Yeah. So I can empathise with the care requirements of and the costs involved with that, but I think maybe someone a little bit more harsh would say, well, that's part of the... That's what you get when you own a pet.
The $2,000 it's costing me to put my dog in a dog sitter while I go to Europe is, yeah, it's painful, but I feel like you're paying for a seat for the dog, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, surely you're paying a premium to have your dog on the flight.
And a fee. Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd have to. And it's got to fit under the seat. There's all of these requirements.
my greyhound would, he would squeeze.
Well, it's supposed to only, it's only supposed to be small dogs, you know.
But small dogs are the yappiest.
Yeah, I know.
I don't want a chihuahua on my flight.
My greyhound doesn't even know how to bark.
Okay. Yeah. Well, look, it could happen. Next year, they're saying. We'll have to stay tuned for that. And some airlines around the world are already doing it. But, hey, that is all we've got time for on The Shake Up for now. It's flown by. Huge thanks to our Shake Up crew. Thanks again, media reporter at Crikey, Dunny Saeed. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave.
You're welcome. Lavin Devai from the Sport and Spice podcast. Thank you for coming in.
Always a pleasure.
Hack on Triple J.
Big thanks again to the Shake Up crew, also to the hardworking Hack team for another huge week. I'll be back on the other side of the weekend. Have a great couple of days. I'll catch you then. See ya.